From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, a live exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Today on the program, we have State Schools Superintendent Martel Menlove and a discussion about the new Common Core standards for education in the state.
Now, it doesn't mean the students are any brighter or not bright. It simply means that we're now against a different standard. Instead of asking them to jump over a high jump bar that's 5 feet, now we're asking them to jump over a bar that's 5'4" or 5'6". It doesn't mean the students have changed. It simply means that we're looking at it a little differently.
That discussion, plus the unveiling of a new healthcare research facility in Murray, and your summary of today's top local headlines. All that and more just ahead on The Rundown, here on KCPW. And welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. A little bit later in the program, we have a discussion with State Schools Superintendent Martel Menlove about the new Common Core Education Standards the state of Utah has adopted. But first, we have this summary of today's top local headlines. Former presidential candidate and Vermont Governor Howard Dean spoke at two rallies for Utah Democrats on Monday to try to energize the party faithful as they kick off an ambitious voter registration drive. Party officials hope to sign up 40,000 new voters they've targeted as likely Democrats. If they meet their goal by November 2014, Democrats say they'll be able to better compete with Republicans who hold most of Utah's congressional seats, statewide offices, and a supermajority in the legislature. Dean urged Democrats to knock on doors, make phone calls, and volunteer in any way they can to spread the party's message and recruit new members. The Utah Lieutenant Governor's Office says about 45% of the state's registered voters are Republicans, 9.5% are Democrats, and 45% are independent. Intermountain Healthcare has created a do-it-yourself lab to develop medical devices and other technologies that they hope will help patients and save money. KCPW reporter Kim Shusky has that story.
Billy Proust of Intermountain Healthcare says doctors, nurses, and staff have a lot of ideas for devices or other innovations that would make them better able to care for their patients.
You may be this world-renowned cardiologist, and you've been in the industry for the past 35 years, and you have ideas running around in your head that if I could just make this or make a tweak to that, it would make life easier. Well, today there's no great place to go and dump those ideas and have it come to fruition.
That is until now. Intermountain has created a type of do-it-yourself lab space that allows them to develop prototypes for some of these ideas. The Healthcare Transformation Lab currently has 20 employees, including engineers.
So that whole process of idea to actual device, to patent, to manufacturing is very, very expensive. And for the average person, they wouldn't even know how to go through that process. Well, here, we're now coming and saying, hey, what is that great idea you've got in your head? And then with all of these tools, we can fairly quickly say, is this what you were thinking of?
And they have had employees come to them with ideas, says Mark Probst, the chief information officer at Intermountain.
One of those ideas was a hand-washing watch. And we thought, wow, that's a pretty good idea.
The Centers for Disease Control estimates there are about 1.7 million hospital-acquired infections every year, contributing to an estimated 99,000 deaths. One of the most frequent and most preventable modes of transmission is through healthcare workers who don't wash their hands. The goal of the watch is to let the workers know if they forgot. The watch senses if they pass through a doorway and a light turns red. It also senses when the worker washes their hands with soap and water or with alcohol gel and the light turns green. To make the plastic casing for the watch, the lab has a 3D printer. To make the electronics that sense when a healthcare worker leaves or enters a room, and when water or alcohol gel is used, there is a machine that makes circuit boards.
So this is the antenna that senses when it's gone through the door. This is for the battery. These right here are the lights. So then we create the body of the watch with the 3D printer, and we shove these things inside the watch. We write some software as well, and then you've got a working prototype.
Probe says the cost of running the lab is about $2.5 million a year, but that's not paid for by patients. Instead, Intermountain has formed partnerships with companies, including big names like Intel, Dell, and CenturyLink, that provide the funding but also help develop the devices. Some of these partners, such as a local company XI3 that makes very small energy-efficient computers, also figure out ways to use their products in the hospital. David Politis is the chief marketing officer for the company.
This is a machine that Intermountain Healthcare is using to run windows in patient rooms and in other places in the hospital, but it's only 20 watts of power. Now, for a comparable machine is going to be between 100 and 200 watts of power. So for an organization like Intermountain Healthcare, they have 34,000 employees. You're talking about a lot of savings. It could save Intermountain millions of dollars a year just in energy savings alone.
Other prototypes currently under development include a pediatric bed that signals to healthcare workers or parents if the bed is accidentally left open. The jailbreak bed, as it's known at the lab, has a sensor that sets off a unique sound that isn't like other alarms in the hospital, so it can be easily heard. The sound can also be customized. Apps that help patients better interact with their physical therapists allow LifeFlight crews to add to patient charts electronically, or doctors to automatically embed pictures into charts are also in the development or testing stage. For KCPW, I'm Kim Shusky.
State officials say a unit of General Dynamics Corporation will open a call center devoted to federal health care reform in Sandy. The Information Technology Unit of General Dynamics will help millions of Americans select policies in the new healthcare marketplace that kicks off later this year. General Dynamics says it is already recruiting some of the 1,600 people it plans to hire under a contract with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. A spokesman for Governor Gary Herbert says the company picked Utah on the state's merits and didn't ask for tax incentives. A 19-year-old West Jordan woman is dead after falling about 120 feet while rappelling outside of Zion National Park. Kane County deputies say Shelby Colette Christensen was killed in the accident Monday at Birch Hollow, which is a popular rappelling destination. Authorities say Christensen had been rappelling with four other people when she began her descent. They say it appears her hand became trapped between the rope and the rock ledge, and she let go, falling to the bottom of the ledge. A Utah State Parks ranger determined she had died, and a Department of Public Safety helicopter crew recovered the body. Christensen's death is the third rappelling accident in Birch Hollow this summer. The other two ended with injuries and helicopter rescues. The Humane Society of Utah is calling on Salt Lake City to ban horse-drawn carriages following the collapse of a horse downtown over the weekend. The animal welfare organization says in a statement that the carriage tours put the public and horses at risk. They say horses can overheat on asphalt or work in frigid conditions in winter and contend with noisy, stressful conditions and exhaust fumes. On Saturday, a 13-year-old horse named Jerry fell to the ground while pulling a carriage. The animal was later treated for colic, an abdominal pain that can cause serious and sometimes deadly problems. The horse's owner, Annette Overson, said the animal showed no symptoms before collapsing. A federal lease auction for drilling rights in Utah drew no bids. The Bureau of Land Management says only one bidder showed up for Tuesday's auction of oil and gas parcels. That bidder made no offers, and the auction closed without any sales. The BLM offered 35 drilling parcels on the west side of the Great Salt Lake, not exactly a hotspot for oil and gas development and far from the oil and gas fields of eastern Utah. BLM spokesperson Megan Crandall says her agency also received none of the usual environmental protests over the sale of any of the drilling parcels, which totaled more than 65,000 acres. Utah's next auction is set for November. BLM says it will offer 82 parcels in traditional drilling country around the Price and Vernal regions. The federal government is set to unlock gates to three roads in the Deep Creek Mountains in Utah's West Desert, in the first settlement over disputed claims of road ownership across federal lands. The settlement is being announced by officials for Utah and Juab County and a number of environmental groups. It was filed for approval by a federal judge in Salt Lake City. The U.S. Justice Department confirmed it filed settlement papers Monday. Utah has filed thousands of legal claims over rights of way it says exist across federal lands. At issue is a Civil War-era law that granted access over federal lands. Some federal agencies have closed roads in sensitive areas. The federal government is agreeing to reopen Granite Canyon, Toms Creek, and Trout Creek roads in the Deep Creek Mountains. And that's our summary of today's local news. You're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. I'm Roger McDonough. We'll be right back. And now on the program, we turn to our discussion with State Schools Superintendent Martel Menlove. Manlove joined us to discuss his work, the ideas behind state educational standards, and Utah's adoption of the Common Core State Standards Initiative. Superintendent Manlove, can you give us an overview of your position, of what your job here at the State Office of Education is?
Sure. I have a variety of things that I'm responsible for. By law, I am the chief officer of the State Board of Education, and so I'm appointed by them and represent them in what they do with public education. There are over 1,000 schools in the state of Utah. We distribute all of the state funding and do some compliance with those entities. We also are available as a state office to provide services back to districts and charter schools. So I have the opportunity to meet basically on a monthly basis with all of the superintendents in the state, the 41 superintendents. We take things to them, we respond back to their concerns and try to have a dialogue and resolve issues there. I also have an opportunity to meet on a regular basis, not always monthly, but almost monthly, with all of the charter school directors in the state. And so, again, an opportunity to express those things and resolve issues. One of my main responsibilities is working with the state legislature. And so the 45 days during the session are a hectic time for this office, because we're trying to respond to requests from legislators and to respond to legislation and specific bills. But recognize that when the session ends, I think this year there were 62 bills that came out of the legislature that dealt with public education. Some of those required that we come back and write new state board rules. Some of them require that we look at funding formulas and those type of things.
Does that happen during every legislative session?
It does, yeah. That's about what's happened the last few legislative sessions. And so we are now just getting finalized on distribution of funding, writing RFPs, identifying products and services that were specified in legislation. Again, distributing money. Some of the funding formulas have changed somewhat. And again, trying to catch up with what's going on. Also recognize that although the session ends, interim meetings continue. And so every month there's an education interim committee meeting. And then this year, there's also a new education task force. And so there are still many opportunities for us to interact. Right, honestly, I try to be a face for public education in Utah. 600,000 plus students. I'm anxious for school to start again so that I can get back into schools. I find being in schools rejuvenating for me and rewarding for me. And so one of my goals for the next year is spend more time in schools where I can actually see what's happening in classrooms and with students.
And you were an educator for many years before this, right?
Yeah, I began my career as a fifth grade teacher. I taught fifth grade and third grade in elementary school. I taught in a middle school. I've been an elementary and a high school principal, superintendent in a couple districts before coming to the State Office of Education. So
I wanted to ask you about something that's been a major issue in the education realm, which is the Common Core Standards. But before we go too far in depth into that, I was hoping we could talk a little bit about maybe the history and philosophy behind policies of educational standards as opposed to curriculum. If you look at standards across a country or across a region or across a state, I mean, the idea is to make certain that everybody's on the same level. Is that it? And is there a precedent there?
Utah has adopted core standards for many, many years. I don't know exactly how many years, but decades. We adopt standards in core areas. So we adopt math standards and English standards and social studies standards and science standards and PE standards. So we've always adopted standards. The intent is that there's a statewide goal or a statewide standard that all students should be achieving. As we have been compared more recently with other systems around the state and around the world, we have recognized the need to make sure that our standards continue to be reflective of Utah. And I think it's important to note that those standards are reflective of our culture, they're reflective of our value system, and all those things are into the standards that we adopt. Some of those things are mandated to us specifically in legislation, but recognize that those standards are Utah standards. You talked about Common Core.
Yeah, what I was going to ask you exactly. So what is the Common Core? Where did it come from?
Common Core is an effort originally by the Council of Chief State School Officers. CCSSO is the name of the group. They, along with the National Governors Association, came to the conclusion that some type of common standards across states, common with other states, that there was some need to look at that. And so those two groups came together, engaged in some activities in which new standards were written for math and for English/language arts. The state of Utah was engaged initially from that. That predates my time here at the state office. But we agreed to be part of that process, and then the state board has adopted those standards in math and English language arts. Now, recognize that they are now our standards, so we often talk about the Utah core standards.
Right.
But they are basically the Common Core standards. We have already modified the English language arts standards since they were adopted. The Common Core standards did not have a standard for cursive writing.
And so these are things you've added to.
So we've added to the English language arts standard, cursive writing. We've had multiple discussions about math standards and whether we ought to change some of those. We have not done that yet. But again, there's an ongoing conversation about standards. We've also recently adopted some early childhood standards. And again, they are Utah standards. But this was a unique situation where a group of states got together and created a set of common standards, common among those states, in which a strong majority of states then adopted those as their standards.
Can you explain why some people are against the Common Core and maybe some of the ideas that are floating around about it?
I think the biggest thing that I hear about the Common Core standards is that there are a set of federal standards, and it is a movement for the federal government to inappropriately take over education, which we all believe is a state right and something that ought to be in the state. So I think part of what you see is a natural push among some people, and right honestly supported by the State Board of Education and this office, a certain resistance to federal interference in what we're doing in Utah, inappropriate interference. And so I think that's the biggest thing that I see. Another myth that I think that we see is the cost of implementing standards and what that cost is. We are developing a new computer adaptive assessment system. It's my opinion that computer adaptive assessment system would have happened whether we adopted the core standards or if whatever standards you want to come with. And there's some expense to that because we want to have our own assessment system. We are not part of one of the national organizations that are doing some assessment. There's two groups. There's the Smarter Balanced and the PART group. We're not part of either of those. We're developing our own assessment. So it'll be our assessment with our items assessing our standards. So there's some expense with moving to that, but again, it's not necessarily with the Common Core, but it's simply with moving to a different assessment system. Mm-hmm. The other myth that I hear frequently that concerns me is this concept of data mining, and that Common Core now causes us to be collecting and reporting additional data. Well, there have been some things that have happened at the same time Common Core has been being implemented. There's some changes in the FERPA and the Federal Education Rights and Family Education Rights and Privacy Act and some other things. But what I can tell you is Common Core does not require us to report any more data. We're not collecting any different data. We're not collecting any more data than what was required for us to collect and report under No Child Left Behind. What we're doing is now, and will be doing, using a different test to determine whether students are proficient or not proficient, but we're still reporting proficiency levels, proficiency scores, as we've always reported.
You know, I've heard that one of the fears of some educators is that their performance evaluations will be tied to the performance of children on new tests gauging those standards.
And there is some truth to that. State legislation requires us to, and we're in the process of developing a teacher evaluation system that does incorporate student proficiency into into evaluating teachers. Currently, it's not, for teachers at least, tied into salaries, but we are developing a statewide, it's not a statewide system, but there's at least some statewide guidelines and a statewide structure that will require districts to evaluate teachers, and part of that evaluation will take in consideration students' testing and how students are doing.
Last week, the Wall Street Journal reported that national test scores are expected to decline. And this is on the heels of test scores coming out of New York and Kentucky, which had adopted Common Core standards, and they'd seen drops in their proficiency in math and reading on state exams. I'm wondering if we should expect to see drops in test scores here in Utah and what that means for students.
I mean, the quick answer is yes. We believe that the standards we've adopted from Common Core in math and in English language arts are more rigorous than the previous standards. As such, if we assess accurately, what we'll find is students being assessed against a set of more rigorous standards won't perform as well as they performed historically. Now, it doesn't mean the students are any brighter or not bright. It simply means that we're now against a different standard. Instead of asking them to jump over a high jump bar that's 5 feet, now we're asking them to jump over a bar that's 5 feet 4 or 5 feet 6. And there's going to be fewer students who are going to be able to do that. It doesn't mean the students have changed. It simply means that we're looking at it a little differently. Now, we believe that as we implement this and as we become more effective in our instruction, that over time, those proficiency levels will not only catch up with where we currently are, but they'll exceed those levels. And so we continue with the goals. The State Board of Education has adopted the goals that 90% of students are reading on grade level, 90% of students are doing mathematics on grade level. And those goals will continue to be the same. Will we have some steeper trajectories to get there? Probably. Will we see some drops, as you've seen in New York and other places? Most likely. Now, you ask if we have some control over that. Well, actually, we do have some control over that. The State Board of Education sets what those cut marks, you know, what those cut scores are. So we could artificially inflate those scores or deflate those scores. But our intention is to simply say, here are students, here's where they accurately are. But again, we're assessing against a set of different standards. And so, yeah, maybe the first year or two, there are likely to be some drops. But again, we believe that over time, we'll not only exceed where we currently are, but hopefully even exceed that 90% goal that the State Board of Education and Prosperity 2020 and the Governor's Office has set.
Well, and I guess that's part of the point is you raise the standards so as to raise performance in the long run.
And that's the intent. And again, to try to help parents, students, and teachers understand exactly where students are against this set of standards so that we can now provide the interventions, the instruction, what we need to have students progress. I mean, the intent is to have students proficient, to have students college and career ready as one of the new terms. And so that's what we're intending to do.
Going back to a previous question I asked about the performance of teachers being based on the standards of students, if we're going to expect to see drops in the first, however long, is that going to be weighted for the teachers?
Yeah, it'll have to be weighted. We'll have to do some adjustments there and look at some things. Most of what we're looking at is whether students are making some progress. And again, it's going to be difficult, particularly in that transition year, to look at. But after that transition year, then we can look individually at teachers and growth within particular classrooms and growth within particular students.
Superintendent Menlove, I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Hey, my pleasure.
Due to time constraints, we had to cut today's interview short, but you can hear the full version of my discussion with State Schools Superintendent Menlove at kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough. This is The Rundown. Stay with us. And that's full time for The Rundown today. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional assistance from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the program, tune in for a conversation with Richard Markosian, the founder and publisher of Utah Stories. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for tuning in. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.